Then I'm going to talk a little bit about the work itself, although I can't really speak to it as an art historian would, as a work of art. But I can talk about some of the things I see in it from a kind of a cultural perspective. And then I'm going to talk about the social and cultural context of the work and aviation's influence on American art and design, which is what I'm interested in. From 1938 to 1940, he joined the faculty of the Laboratory School of Industrial Design in New York City, which was originally called the Design Laboratory, which is an interesting entity, a tuition-free school of design that opened in 1935. It was sponsored by the Works Progress Administration Federal Art Project, which you may know about. It's kind of an attempt by the New Deal to put artists to work in various ways. What I find interesting about the Design Lab was that it was under the directorship of industrial designer Gilbert Rohde, who was primarily a furniture designer. He worked with a company called Herman Miller that you may know about, designing furniture, modernist furniture for them. They gave him a huge commission, and he expanded as a result of his work with Herman Miller. Their office was expanded from their central location in Michigan to a couple of other places, Chicago, I think, and New York City. But the other interesting thing is that on the board of advisors for the Design Lab were people like Walter Dorwin Teague, Raymond Loewy, and Laszlo Moholy-Nagy. And I think these people were all influential in Rozhak's career. And at the Design Laboratory, he taught 2- and 3-dimensional design and an experimental workshop in materials. Unfortunately, the Design Laboratory closed, and so in 1939, Rozhak goes to work for Norman Bel Geddes, who was a famous American industrial designer. And he works for him on the General Motors Pavilion at the New York World's Fair, 1939 to 40, New York World's Fair in Flushing Meadows. After that, during World War II, interestingly, he works for the Brewster Aeronautical Corporation in Newark, New Jersey. Now, this is an aircraft manufacturer, and so he actually goes to work designing airplanes for Brewster. And at the same time, he's teaching various courses in aircraft mechanics, and he works as a navigational and engineering draftsman. So it seems to me that, working for Brewster probably wasn't all that lucrative, so I had to do other things.
But that's an unusual thing for an artist to do.
It is.
Do you have
extremely interesting.
Any ideas of, first of all, why would people designing aircraft hire an artist? And second, why would an artist want to start working?
I wish I could answer that.
I have no idea. But that might also be the spirit of the times, too.
It's true.
Which is that artists are looking at technology as new material for their work.
Exactly.
And maybe
exactly.
He was learning some things.
I think that's probably the reason he did this, is that he probably wanted to know more and more about aviation and more about the engineering aspects of aviation that perhaps he couldn't, so that he could incorporate it in his work. And you can see some of that stuff going on here in this piece.
Yeah. I mean, definitely the idea that that wings have to be streamlined, or the bodies of airplanes have to be streamlined. I get that this is streamlined also.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And I'm going to talk about streamlining, the Streamline Moderne, which I think is probably the most... I would say the Streamline Moderne movement in the United States in industrial design is the way art approaches popular aesthetics in this country. So let's talk a little bit about the work itself. Ascension was done in 1945, so it's sort of after the period that he works at the Design Laboratory and on the New York World's Fair. But it's a typical piece, I think, by Rozsák, constructivist, that is, it's dynamic. It's not a static piece. It's dynamic in its use of space, of sculptural space. It appears to be influenced by his experience as an industrial designer, especially by his work on the faculty of the design laboratory and his work with the Bell Geddes. And you can see the machine tooled metals are suggestive of aircraft parts, especially the parts above the globe at the top. They look like things that you might find in an airplane.
They almost look like nuts and bolts.
Yeah, nuts and bolts. The globe, I'm not sure about. The projections from the globe, I'm not too sure about.
This down here almost looks like it could swivel. Like it looks like actually a piece from a propeller.
Yes, yes. In fact, if you were to turn, this is elliptical in nature, this central piece here. If you were to turn it on its side, it would be very much like a wing profile. And aeronautical engineers were always changing the shapes of wings to get the most the maximum effect from the aerodynamics. The aerodynamic flow over a wing is really what makes a wing successful or not successful. So I think in that respect, you can see this perhaps as a kind of a wing shape or a parabola shape or elliptical shape. But very suggestive of a wing, I think, or even a propeller in some respects. Probably more of a wing. Of course, you can also you can see that it has a very upward movement, which suggests dynamism and flight. There are some comparisons to Brancusi's Bird in Space series, but. I've looked at that series on the internet, and there were a number of pieces, and that's really more, I think, it's less, I think it's more aesthetic and less sort of constructivist, because it doesn't have these elements of metal and other aspects that this sculpture has. Now, one of my colleagues who knows more about aeronautics and art than I do, Jerry Silk, says, quote, Rozsák mixed modern materials such as aluminum, metal, steel, and plastic along with copper, brass, and wood to produce pieces that oscillate between purely abstract sculpture, visionary architecture, and resemblances to aircraft, their parts, and related tools and instruments. And I think you can see that in this piece. In many respects. Now I'm going to talk a little bit about the social and cultural context of this piece and aviation's influence on American art and design. And aviation had an influence on artists probably going back to the turn of the century, and it begins in Italy to a movement called Futurism, which was the founding father of which was a man named Filippo Tommaso Marinetti. And he wrote numerous manifestos. He was kind of a bombastic figure in Italy. But the futurists were interested in sort of overturning the traditions of the Italian past, the classical past. And they wanted to bring Italy into the 20th century. And so they saw technology, speed, dynamism as the motivations, the most salient motivations for artists. And they developed, as a result, what was called aeropittura, which was a group of artists who were interested in not so much in portraying aircraft, but using aircraft as a kind of a stimulus for ideas about dynamism and speed and forward motion and so on. There were also movements in aero literature, aero sculpture, Aero Cinema. The Italians, I mean, just took the airplane and literally ran with it.
It's kind of an interesting thing, too, because I think when you look at a lot of artwork from that time, people were seeing the world differently.
Yes.
Because of air travel.
Right.
And they saw the world from another vantage point.
Yes, yes.
They could see villages as part of a larger whole, and they could see... and they had a sense of time that was different, too.
Exactly, exactly. You
know? So people's reality was shifting, and I think that artists were really wanting to capture that reality and saw maybe that...
Exactly.
Sorry to get on my soapbox.
No, no, really.
But saw traditional art was not capturing the reality of how technology was changing.
Exactly. A modern life.
Experience, yeah.
You can see that in all kinds of artistic movements in Europe. The Cubism, for example.
Right.
I mean, I think that's what the Cubists were trying to do. Now, the airplane was one machine that futurists were very much interested in, but they're also interested in cars, they're interested in trains, they're interested in machines of transport. And but the idea of a machine as an inspiration for art sort of moves entirely through Europe, and it's probably most manifest in European culture. In the areas of architecture and design. In Italy, you have people like Antonio Santalia, who's very much interested in this idea of machines as inspiration for architecture.
The Industrial Revolution actually gave rise to a lot of this.
Yes, yes it did.
From the 19th century.
Yes. But I think this is different because I think... there is some reaction against the machine in the 19th century, for example, on the part of the British Romantics are reacting right. against the machine. But it's only later they lost. It's only later that, as Ryan suggests, artists see the 20th century as essentially different from the 19th century, primarily because of technology and the quickening pace of life, I think, and the changing culture. Le Corbusier, for example, is also interested in these things, and he's somewhat influential on American industrial design. He, I think, is one of the first people who actually went up in an airplane and tried to... he actually wrote about being in an airplane above the world and seeing what he saw and then theorizing that architects and designers should actually design from that perspective. A German, Erich Mendelssohn, was also interested in machines as inspiration for architecture. And he's probably one of the first architects to use the streamlined moderne, if you will, in his buildings. Now, in the United States, this comes rather slowly to the United States, which is still artistically kind of mired in the 19th century, I think. But you do have certain artists and movements. Charles Sheeler, Charles DeMuth, who were called precisionists because their work reflected an interest in American industrialism and the modern landscape, derived inspiration from futurism, cubism, and to some extent the streamlined modern movement in Europe. Some precisionists like Louis Lozowick and Elsie Driggs actually painted the airplane. They had works called the Aeroplane. Lozowick's from 1925 to 1927 is a series of paintings. And then Elsie Driggs, one painting called The Aeroplane, 1928, which used aviation as a motif in their work.
Lise Van der Rohe designed IIT, but when was that?
I'm not sure. Mies van der Rohe was associated with the Bauhaus movement, which is a little bit, I mean, their ideas are somewhat different from these ideas. And as I said before, in the United States, aviation made its greatest impression on aesthetics and what you might call popular aesthetics, and especially in industrial design, in what was called the streamlined modern movement. Probably the most leading proponent of this movement in the United States was Norman Bel Geddes, who was an industrial designer. Before that, he'd been a theatrical set designer. But he was probably the most well-known of the four major American industrial designers during the Depression. We know that he had met Erich Mendelsohn in 1925 or 26. We know that he read Le Corbusier's Toward a New Architecture, which was translated into English in 1927, and that he was influenced by both men. He was also influenced very much by the airplane, and that's where my interest in him and the industrial designers of that era, that's where I think, you know, I think it's probably, there's a story there, and that's the story I'm trying to tell in my book. Interesting thing about Rozsák to me is that aeronautics inspires him as an artist and sculptor, which is, I think, the first example I've ever come across where somebody is actually, who's actually worked as an industrial designer and then worked as an aircraft designer, you know, is an artist, okay? Yeah. And does this purely for aesthetic, you know, for aesthetic reasons. But he's also an industrial designer, which is a commerce, you know, it's part of commerce, it's a business. So you have a combination of you know, artist, industrial designer in Rozsák, which you don't see. Now these other people, these other industrial designers, used these aeronautical motifs, particularly streamlining, and that is the idea of efficiency and speed in work for commercial companies. Henry Dreyfus, for example, worked for the New York Central Railroad, and he worked to streamline their locomotives, and as did Raymond Loewy with the Pennsylvania Railroad.
And do you think that these are people that Rozsák had contact with?
Oh, I'm sure. Okay. I'm sure of it. I wish I knew more. In fact, as a result of this lecture, I want to investigate his ties to these people a little more. Because I think I could work him into my chapter on streamlining. But as I say, the Streamline Modern was really more than a kind of a design, popular aesthetic movement, because it's a lot of things, and it's very hard to describe. You know, first of all, you could see it as a commercial gimmick, as a way that these industrial designers figured, well, we can use this to redesign our products, which are, you know, very 19th century looking, into something more modern, and therefore stimulate sales. And that definitely is one of the reasons behind it. You can also see it as a kind of a cultural movement in the United States, aside from its sort of popular aesthetic ideas. You can see it, you know, manifest in all kinds of things, because these industrial designers didn't stop at vehicles or machines of transport. I mean, eventually they started designing household goods that were streamlined.
And so it makes sense that an artist who's probably going to be selling things to households too,
right,
would also think that way.
Exactly. And
but I do think he's probably thinking more metaphorically in a way.
I think Rozsák is. Yeah, certainly. And I mean, the only reason I make this connection is because, you know, he's associated with people like Bel Geddes. He's associated with this design laboratory, which has on its board and faculty, you know, members of the design, industrial design profession. So I think he's influenced by the idea of industrial design.
But it brings up an interesting question for all of us to think about, which is this more design than art?
Than art. No, I don't think so.
What do other people think? I'm just kind of curious.
I think it has the basic requisites of
work of art, but it's including the illusions to the machines
and
it has balance, color, everything.
But that design can have that too. I mean, design can have balance and color.
Exactly. Sure. But the
so
thing
the
is that design the is thing? Design is to be is commercial.
Yeah, design has a function, but it doesn't have a function, but it's yeah.
Right. Yeah. Right.
So what do we know about the exact thought about the artist? Why did he do this?
I can't tell you.
I'm just putting it out.
I think that's why what's so interesting about what Dom was talking about is that here's an artist who actually wanted so much to respond to technology that he actually went, I mean, he was also paid too.
Right.
But he also went to work with designers of aircraft. So it's
very interesting.
Yeah.
How much of a body of work did he leave?
He had quite a lot.
Well, let me get through the end of this because I want to talk, I want to finish by saying that I think, as with the Streamline Moderne movement, which has its culmination at the New York World's Fair in 1939 and 40, after that, because it's such an optimistic idea, technological, you know, everything is possible. It's called the world of tomorrow. But World War II changes all that. And so the Streamline Moderne movement, I think, sort of ends, even though you see traces of it after the war. But I think the sort of ideological and cultural impact of it ends in 1939-1940. And you see this with artists who were influenced by the airplane and other, you know, other machines. They start to lose their optimism about technology. In particular, Rozsák, because in 1946 and 1947, you know, immediately after he does this work, which is quite optimistic and quite playful, I think, in a way, he does a piece called Spectre of Kitty Hawk, which is owned by the Museum of Modern Art, which is much different from, and I think much darker than this piece. Because of World War II, because of the atomic bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, artists like Rozsák, and you can see this happening in many respects in other artists who were inspired by the airplane, more or less turn against it because they see it as a vehicle of destruction. And I'll just end by quoting my colleague Jerry Silk. He talks about the Spectre of Kitty Hawk. He says, where ascension appears to be a playful and positive use of aeronautical elements, Spectre is in Gerald Silk's words. Gerald Spectre announces that the initial fears that the Wright brothers' invention might wreak terrible destruction in the future have now been realized. Made of hammered steel and brazed with bronze and brass, this spiky, tentacular piece with a scaly, repellent surface suggests a terrifying primitive beast as alleged progress becomes atavism. Because of the destructive way aircraft had been used, Rozsák remarked, he likened the sculpture to the, quote, superior dominance of the pterodactyl that at one time also scourged the earth, the air and the earth, quote. So that, with that, I'll end. And
thank you so much for doing this today.
Thank you.
It was really interesting. I appreciate you doing it.
Thank you.